Hi, this is John Oates, and you are listening to Life Minute.
Master musician and songwriter John Oates has just released his latest masterpiece, simply called Oates. If you think it sounds somewhat familiar, you're right. With some newfound inspiration, he's plugged back in his 58 Stratocaster and has pumped out a groovy R&B and pop sound that he made famous back in the 70s and 80s. He stopped by the Life Minute studios to tell me all about it and more. This is a Life Minute with the legendary John Oates. All right, John Oates in the house. Woohoo!
Well, thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks so much for coming.
Okay.
Live and in person. I love it. I love it. You got a new album out, simply called Oates.
Wow, what a concept. Well, I figured, you know, I'm at a certain point in my career where I deserve to have a self-titled album.
Damn right.
And actually, the reality is I just couldn't figure out a better title, so there you go.
Tell us about it. What inspired you?
Well, you know, I've been really playing in the field of roots music and Americana and acoustic music over the past really 15 years in Nashville. It's been great. I mean, I've been embraced by the Americana community. I've been part of it and really making great relationships and really enjoying that. And made an album called Reunion, which was very introspective, very acoustic, very singer-songwriter in style. I ran into some young artists in Nashville, one in particular named Devin Gilfillian, who's from Philly. And we immediately bonded, and I loved his energy, and I love his voice. And we wrote a song together. It was called Mending. It was kind of funny because, you know, when you work with someone for the first time, you never know how it's going to turn out, right? So he came over to the house, and my wife had some tarot cards. And she held the tarot cards out. She said, pick one. And Devin pulled out a card, and it said Mending. And went, what a great title. That's our song. And we literally walked into my music room and wrote that song.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah. And so I loved his energy, and we did it as a duet. And we released it about a year and a half ago as a standalone single. But it really kind of sparked my interest. I've been playing acoustic guitar for so long, and I wanted to, like, pick up my old Stratocaster and plug it into an amp, and I wanted to kind of get my groove on a little bit. And that's what happened. I started writing songs that were much more groove-oriented, tapping into that Philly soul thing, the old R&B, vintage R&B, which I love so much, which is also as much a part of my musical DNA as the folk acoustic-y thing is. It was time to move to another level, and that's what happened, yeah.
You know what's so neat about you? You have a vision and you just execute on it and you always succeed.
Well, I don't know about that. Let's hope so. I don't overthink it, I can tell you that. I really try to go with what feels natural. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always feel like that's, you know, usually the best way to do it.
Well, it's lovely. It's a beautiful album.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Thank
really
you.
It really is lovely. Yeah. I don't have another word for it. Your last few things were very Americana folk.
Yeah.
But what inspired you to go back?
It just felt right. The song Mending that I did with Devin, what we did is we put a band together in the studio that were different from the Americana players that I was used to playing with. They were different players, and they brought something different to the recording session. You know, I learned a long time ago, actually this goes back to the early days of Hall & Oates when Daryl and I were recording with Arif Mardin for Atlantic Records, doing the Abandoned Luncheonette album. I learned so much from him on how to kind of choose the right musicians for the right moment. And so, you know, it's one thing to, you know, to, you kind of know your players. It's almost like having a virtual Rolodex of players. You know who does, you know, which bass, there's a million great bass players and a million great guitar players, but who's the exact right one for that particular song? And what we did is when we put this band together to play Mending, I love the bass player, I love the keyboard player, I love the drummer, and it just felt like a breath of fresh air with a different sound and a different style. So I began to use basically the same players on the rest of the songs as I wrote more and more songs for the album.
Right. And what about the band Lawrence? You worked with them
as
well, right?
They're a New York band. I don't know how much you know about them, but they're fantastic. It's a brother and sister, Clyde and Gracie Lawrence, and they are real New Yorkers. You know, they're dyed-in-the-wool New Yorkers. They're amazing. Amazing singers, amazing writers, players, whatever. And what I loved about them when I was introduced to them was that they felt like kind of everything that should be good about modern pop music. As I said, they sing, they write, they play, they don't use samples, they don't use a lot of digital technology. It's really organic and real. And I love that about them. I started listening to them and I was inspired by them. I was sitting in my house listening to some of their music, And I thought, wow, they have such a joyful energy to their music. And I said, oh, I wish I could write something that sounds like this. And I picked up my guitar and I started writing, and I came up with this song called Enough is Enough. To me, it sounded just like them. And I went, wow. And then I got to the second verse and I couldn't come up with anything. I came up with something, but it was crap. And I said, wait a minute. And I took one of their songs called Don't Lose Sight. And I said, wait a minute, they're talking about the same thing I'm talking about, except they're talking about it from their point of view. And so I took their words and I put them into my second verse. And I didn't want to like be stealing their words. So I literally sent them the song. And I said, hey, you know, full disclosure, I used your words in the second verse and I'm happy to share the publishing and the writing credit with you. And they were like, oh, this is great. Well, they loved it. To make it even better, they were really super busy. Gracie was on a Broadway show. So they said, let's do it in New York. Let's, you know, record our parts in New York. Because I had already recorded the actual track for the song in Nashville. And I hadn't recorded in New York since the 80s? So I went back to the Hit Factory, which was where Daryl and I first started recording in New York back in the late 70s. So it was kind of a full circle moment to be working with a New York group in New York, recording in a New York studio. It was really cool. And so I love the energy on that song, and that's how that happened.
So cool.
Yeah.
And produced by David Komolsky?
And myself, yeah.
Okay.
David's my co-producer, yeah.
Okay. Want to walk us through some of the other songs on the album?
Sure.
Through some of your other faves.
Well, my favorite of all is A Ways Away. I love that song. I wrote that with a guy named Jed Hughes, who's a very highly in-demand studio musician, plays on a lot of the big country records. But he's actually Australian, but he does his own thing too. Some of his solo work is amazing. We just met, and I just go with a gut feeling. I just felt that we could do something together. I didn't know what it was going to be. And what happened was, funny anecdote with that song, he's so busy and I was so busy that we couldn't find a time to get together, but we wanted to get together. And we kept trading phone calls and emails and texts. Finally, you know, we looked at our calendars and we picked a date that was like 2 months out, or maybe 3 months out. I can't remember. And I was talking to him and I said, look, at least we have a date we've agreed on. But I said, it's really a ways away, but you know, we'll do it. And I went, wait a minute. And I said, that's our song. He laughed. He said, I said, A Ways Away. That's a great title. That's our song. And so I said, don't forget it, because 3 months from now, we're going to write that song. And sure enough, he came over and we wrote that song.
Amazing.
Yeah. You never know how it's going to happen.
Let Me Be the One.
Me Be the One. I wrote that with a guy named Ron Artis II. He's a really cool. He's from Hawaii, but he lives in Nashville. He travels constantly. And he came over too. And I had seen him perform, and I really liked his directness. He has a very, very pure spiritual directness to his vibe, his whole persona. He came over, and I was really conscious of not trying to make it, or to overthink it and make it too complicated. And that's a very, very simple song. The chord changes are very simple, and we wrote it in about an hour and a half. We were like, yeah, that's it. We're done. It was good.
Amazing. Pushing a Rock, that's a redo, right?
Yeah, that's a song that I released digitally prior. It worked so well. A lot of people, because it was released digitally, especially some of my older fans, you know, they don't stream all the time. And so I wanted to put it on a collection. It worked, and I'm really proud of that song. It's a very important song to me. It's about never giving up. It's about overcoming obstacles. That has a crazy story, too. I wrote that with a guy named Nathan Paul Chapman. Now, you may not know his name, but when he was a young kind of starting out in Nashville in the early 2000s, he got a very fortuitous call from a record label saying that they needed help with a young 13-year-old curly-haired blonde girl from Pennsylvania. Gee, I wonder who that could have been. And they weren't making the right record with her, and they didn't know, but they believed in her. And he started working with Taylor Swift and made her first 4 or 5 albums together, multiple Grammys, superstar, you know the rest of the story. But at the time, Taylor had moved on with different producers, and this was 2014. And so I called him up and I said, what are you doing? And he said, I don't know. He says, I don't know what I'm gonna do now. Because it was like a life change for him, not, you know, to have had such success in working with, you know, someone as dynamic as her. And so I said, well, you know what? my solution is let's try to write a song and kind of capture whatever that is in the moment. And as I was going over to his house, I was thinking about the old myth of Sisyphus pushing a rock uphill and having something that was just, you know, overwhelming and something that you needed to overcome, and that it rolls back down, but you can never give up. And all those thoughts were in my head, and I gave him that idea, and we wrote the song. And I put it out on an album in 2014, but it was a different song. And when COVID hit, I was sitting around the house with a lot of time on my hands. I said, you know, the lyrics in that song are more important now during COVID than they were in 2014. So I called him up and I said, you know, I think the music is not very good, but the lyrics are really good. I said, would you mind if I try to rewrite the music? And he said, no, man, have at it. So I did. And then I sent him a newer version, an updated version. And he said, that's the way it always should have sounded. The version you're hearing now is the revised version of that song. The lyrics are essentially the same, but the music is completely different. I loved it so much, we put it on the album.
You should reach out to Taylor Swift. Seems like you like her. You mentioned her last time, too.
She's really something. She's everything that everyone thinks and more.
I could see that collab. World Gone Wrong?
World Gone Wrong, I wrote in Colorado. My family had left the house, and Amy went back to Nashville. My son went back to work in D.C., and I was in the house by myself. And I was sitting there for a while, and it was great because I like being alone. I can really think and, you know, do things. But I thought, God, it would be terrible if I was really alone, like if they weren't around. And that's what I wrote that song about.
Disconnected.
Disconnected was the COVID song. That was a total COVID-inspired song. I felt like we were all disconnected. We weren't talking, we weren't interacting, people were staying home, it was weird. And the word disconnected just summed it up, and I wrote it.
And Get Your Smile On?
Get Your Smile On. I also did that during COVID. I came up with the idea for it, and there was no one to work with. Couldn't go into the recording studio, there was no one to collaborate with. And so I wrote the whole song, and I actually recorded the song that you hear on the album, I recorded on my laptop. Completely. I played all the instruments, sang all the parts, and I did it just because it was COVID and I was bored. And then when I listened back, it sounded really good. So we put it on the album just like that. It's literally from my laptop right onto the record.
Dreaming About Brazil.
Yeah, I really love that song. When I was younger, I was a real bossa nova fan, especially a fan of Carlos Jobim, the famous bossa nova guitarist. I learned all those songs. I, you know, can play a lot of those songs. And that's what I kind of do, you know, just for fun. Every once in a while, I'll play bossa nova. I started writing that song, and I wrote it, and then I realized I couldn't sing it because it was too hard to sing. But I really loved the song, and I didn't want to just ignore it. So I got a good friend of mine, Wendy Moten, who's an amazing singer. She actually came in second on The Voice a few years back. And she's really one of the top background singers in the world. She sings background for everybody on everyone's record, but she's also an amazing artist on her own. And I just thought it might be a fun thing to get her to sing the lead, because I knew she'd kill it, and she did. And then I sang a little bit with her, but it's really featuring her. It's just a great opportunity to work with her.
Nice. Don't make me say the next one. Bajo la luz
bajo,
de la luna.
Bajo la luz de la luna. Oh, that's my high school Spanish. That's about as far as I can get. Under the light of the moon. A good friend of mine made an indie film called Gringa. He was director, and he sent me the script, and I loved the script, and I started seeing some of the rushes from the film. It's about a young girl who is from Southern California, graduates from high school. Her dad had left prior to that, and her mom gets killed in a car accident, and she literally is alone, and she doesn't know what to do, so she decides to go to Mexico to find her father. And when she finds her father, it's not all that she hoped it would be. And but it's a really nice story. It's a really great story. She falls in love. She meets a young Mexican boy, and it's a really has a good Hollywood ending, right? And he asked me if I could try to write a song for it. So I wrote a couple songs, actually, and that was the one I think I liked best. So I added a few Spanish lyrics in there, you know.
And Walking in Memphis.
Well, that's weird. First of all, the Mark Cohen song is a classic. It's so good. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but I did The Masked Singer.
I
think I remember that.
Well, I hope you don't remember, but if you do,
a couple years ago,
I was the anteater.
Yes.
Okay, man-eater, anteater, get it? Yeah, I know. And the first song, you know, they don't let you just do whatever you want. They have themes for each show, and they gave me a list of songs, and I had to pick one, and I picked Walking in Memphis, because I had never sung it before. And we did it in kind of an R&B, kind of up-tempo way, a little bit more aggressive version than the Mark Cohen version. I realized how cool the song was, and it was fun to sing. So after I got eliminated, which I was really happy about, can you want to hear a funny story about that?
Yes.
Okay.
I want to hear all the stories.
All right, well, I got through 3 episodes of The Masked Singer. You know, I kept making it, right? And it was horrible because I was, not, the show is great, don't get me wrong, but it was horrible being inside that crazy suit because
hot.
I couldn't see out of it. It was hot. It was this big, giant nose that came down to the ground and giant shoes, and it was just weird. So here's the dichotomy of the whole thing. I was booked to play the Newport Folk Festival, which I've always wanted to play. It's one of the classic gigs, you know, to play. And I'm doing it acoustically. That was on a Sunday night in Newport, Rhode Island. I had to be on the set at 8:30 in the morning in LA the next morning on Monday morning. So I finished my set at Newport, jump in a car, head to Boston Logan Airport, get on the red eye, arrive in LA at about 2:30 in the morning, go straight to the hotel, lay down in bed for, I don't know, an hour, maybe 2 hours or whatever, get up, take a shower, and then put that suit on and go to the television set. And then I had to sing. Well, I was dizzy, literally dizzy. And I made it through the first round. And when I had to do the second song, I got out there and I thought I was going to faint. I actually thought I was going to faint. And I'm in pretty good shape, and I don't normally think that. And I was thinking, oh God, I hope I lose because I've got to take this suit off and get out of here. And I did, I got eliminated. And when they took the head off me, I was like, I was trying to be cool about it, but I was like, thank God, I'm going home.
That's
yeah,
awful.
So anyway, you got to suffer for your art.
Yeah, right, that's right. And are you touring with a new band?
Yeah,
for this? Okay.
Brand new band.
Okay.
I call it the Good Road Band because I had an old Good Road Band. This is Good Road Band volume version 2, I guess you'd call it. Yeah, a lot of the guys, the same guys who played on the record. It's great. They're younger and they've got a lot of energy, which is good for me. Kind of keeps me on my toes.
That's so neat.
Yeah.
How does it happen for you?
You know, it's got to be natural. It's got to feel real, especially in the songwriting process. You know, I know when something's good, the hairs on my arm stand up. No, and really, it never fails. If I'm writing a song and all of a sudden the hairs on my arm stand up, I know something has happened. I don't know what it is. It's just one of those weird things. If I can't pick up an acoustic guitar and play that song for you and you don't get it, then it's not right. There's something wrong there. It's not like, you know, I remember a lot of instances where, you know, I'd be writing a song and I go, yeah, it's pretty good. You know, once we get in the studio and we put this on it and we put that on it, yeah, it's going to come alive. Uh-uh. It's got to be real from the source. It's got to be real from the inception. And if it works, you'll know it. And I can play it with an acoustic guitar or I can play it with a full band and synthesizers and strings or whatever. And that's the icing on the cake.
So cool. And did you play with William H. Macy?
Yeah.
Is that right? How did that come to be?
He's my neighbor in Colorado.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. And his niece, who just got married last Saturday, used to be our babysitter.
Oh, wow.
And our nanny. She used to travel with us on the road when our son was really young. So yeah, he's a really good guy. Well, we met a while back, and then I was at an event where he played the ukulele and sang these really unique, quirky song, cool songs. And I was like, my wife and I were listening. I said, God, it might be fun to like do a show with him. So after he did this, it was like a private event. I said, have you ever, do you want to like play live? And he was like, what do you mean? And I said, yeah, like I've got a couple acoustic shows because I have an acoustic show that I do that's different from what I'm doing now. And I said, yeah, I've got one in Steamboat, Colorado, and one in Denver. And since you're in Denver, you know, you're in Colorado, I said, you want to just come? And he said, okay. So I called the promoters. The shows were already on sale and there was no one on the bill except for me. And I called the promoters and said, hey, I'd like to bring William H. Macy. And the one promoter in Steamboat said, well, what does he do? I said, well, you know, he's an actor, but he's like really good. And he does these really funny songs. So they said, okay. So, and he came out and the people went absolutely nuts.
Oh,
because
so cool.
We added him at the last minute. It was kind of a surprise thing. And he's, you know, first of all, he's a consummate actor. He's an, well, you know his work. He's just so engaging and so funny and so smart. It was great. So now we've done a thing, and I think we're going to do more shows together.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I have to ask, it's been all over the news that your legal dispute with Daryl
yes.
has gone into arbitration. Can you say anything about that?
It's finished. It's completely. Yeah, we have amicably separated our business interests, basically, and it was really a business thing. And, you know, now we're pursuing whatever is in our artistic future. We don't know, but it's great. I'm really relieved that it's come to conclusion, and it's all, everyone's satisfied.
Good. Are you guys amicable?
Yeah, well, sort of, I guess. I don't know. We don't really talk very much. So.
You've been in this business a very long time. What's your secret to longevity?
Well, I do have good genes. My dad died at 101. What I lost in the altitude department, I gained in the in the ethnic genes department. I really try to stay healthy. I do a lot of biking, hiking, skiing. I do a lot of yoga. I try to eat well. I don't drink and I don't smoke. I don't know what else I can tell you, but
well, it shows.
I'm
you
still
look
here.
Amazing.
Well, thanks.
You sound better than ever.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Did you always know you wanted to be a musician?
I didn't have a choice. I was a kid. I have a recording of me singing at 4 years old. As a kid, I just sang. You know what my first paid gig was?
What?
Believe it or not, right here on Broadway, literally probably 2 blocks from here. There was a restaurant called the Brass Rail. And my uncle was getting married. And the family, of course, went to the wedding. And the reception was in this restaurant right on Broadway. Yeah. And they had a little band. And my mom, who was a stage mom, she pushed me up there. And I sang a song in Italian. When I was probably 5 or something, and they gave me $5.
Oh my God.
So I've been a pro for a very long time.
Oh, wow. So they were supportive then of your music career.
They were more than supportive. My mother was a real stage mother.
Wow.
Yeah,
aww.
She pushed me. She used to make me wear a red blazer and white bucks, and to this day, I can't wear red.
Aww. Did they just hear you singing one day and then they knew?
I don't know. I was 4 years old.
But
I
you
just
loved
sang.
It, right?
I just
you
sang.
It.
I probably sang nursery rhymes or whatever. I have a recording of Here Comes Peter Cottontail. And then a little bit later on, when I was about 6, I have a recording of me singing the Elvis song, All Shook Up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What about writing? When did you know you could write?
My first song I ever wrote was in 7th grade, when I was about 12 or 13. I had written, the class was assigned to write a poem. And at the time, what was going on in the world was the Cuban Missile Crisis. I wrote a song about that because I was also playing folk music, and it was the protest songs were in vogue at the time. So I wrote this poem about the Cuban Missile Crisis, and my teacher knew that I played guitar and said, "Hey, that's pretty good. You should put that to music." And I thought, wow, I never thought of that. I said, wow, that's an interesting idea. So I put some music to it. I don't know what it was, or I don't remember anything about it. I never recorded it, of course, but that was my first song.
Does that teacher know?
I hate to tell you, but that teacher's long gone.
Oh, did she see you become famous?
I have no idea.
Oh,
no idea.
Can you imagine? What about guitar? Were you self-taught?
Combination. I took some guitar lessons when I started when I was 6. And my mom took me to a local music store in adjacent town, because I lived in a very small town in Pennsylvania. I remember my mom saying, well, he's left-handed. And the teacher said, oh, that won't matter. And so I just picked up a guitar. So I play right-handed, even though I'm left-handed. And no, I loved it.
Funny.
You know, yeah. So,
what do you think you'd be doing if you weren't doing this?
I could have been a race car driver. I did race professionally for a very
really?
Short period of time. Yeah.
Wow.
And amateur as well. Yeah, I love that. I still love to drive. It's one of my hobbies and passions. You know, I would have liked to have been a teacher. Yeah, I liked a mentor, and I like that.
Aww,
I think that's
so
important.
Yeah. Noble profession. What would your current self tell your younger?
Read your contracts. Get a better lawyer.
Who were your influences growing up?
Wow. Well, you know, I'm old enough to remember music before rock and roll. My parents used to play me big band music, and swing was the music that they loved as kids. Because, you know, people always play the music that you liked as a teenager. I remember, well, we moved from, I was born in New York in the city at Bellevue Hospital, and our whole family was in New York, and we moved to Pennsylvania when I was about four. So, but we would always come in every weekend to New York because my parents were homesick and they had all their friends and family here in the city. So as we would drive in from Pennsylvania, you know, I remember sitting in the back of the old car that we had, and they, as we would get near New York, the New York radio station, I think it was WNEW, used to come in as we were coming across the Pulaski Skyway into, you know, toward Manhattan. There was this guy named Marvin Block who had a show called Make Believe Ballroom. And he played the old swing and big band music. And so I always knew we were getting near New York when I could hear that song, well, those songs. So I knew all the Glenn Miller and, you know, Tommy Dorsey and, you know, Lionel Hampton and, you know, Duke Ellington. And I knew all those songs. So a few years later, when rock and roll actually started and radio in the Philadelphia area where we were living started playing rock and roll music, I said, wow, something new had happened. I was totally aware that, even though I was young, I knew that something new had happened. And so I immediately, you know, started listening to Fats Domino and Chuck Berry and Elvis and Buddy Holly. And then, of course, I was six, so I played guitar. And, you know, those early rock songs were super easy to play. They were only three chords. And so, you know, I started playing early rock. And I just, my whole life has been parallel to what's happened in rock and roll. Mm-hmm. You know, and then folk music hit in the early 60s, actually, among the college campuses. And I had some friends who had older brother who went to college and brought back these folk records. So I started listening to, you know, Dave Van Ronk and Woody Guthrie and, you know, the Carter Family and all that kind of stuff. And so I started doing that. And so, you know, it's really amalgamation of the roots of American music that's very important to me. I feel like, you know, being part of that, a very small part of the tradition of great American popular music.
Yeah, that's for sure. What was the first album you ever bought?
Well, you know, we bought singles back in 45s at first because I didn't even have a record player that could play an album. I probably bought Ray Charles's Greatest Hits around 1960, I would say, something like that.
How do you hone your voice?
How do I hone it?
Yeah, do you do anything?
Well, try not to talk too much. But that's not working out too well today. All I've been doing is talking about myself for about the last 12 hours. You know, it's a muscle. You have to be careful. You have to learn how to sing. You have to learn how to breathe correctly. And you have to learn how to use it. So I have to be very careful when I'm on tour. I have to make sure that I don't overdo it. I have certain ways of singing where I can push a little harder than others. I have to make sure I take days off, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, good. And you've been married a long time.
Mm-hmm.
What do you attribute it to?
Well, I married a Midwest farmer's daughter, so she comes from a good family, and they've really, you know, they've become my family now, obviously. And she's a great person. She's smart, and she keeps me in line, and she's been a great partner.
That's nice. You struggled with depression. Who hasn't, really? What are your strategies for, you know, keeping your mental health in check?
You know, just trying to stay as objective as possible about, you know, what you're doing and not allowing your self-worth to be defined by your career success, I think that's really important. I've seen so many musicians who really their self-worth is wrapped up in what they perceive to be the success in their career. It's a dangerous place to be. You know, you have to know who you are as a person before you know, and you have to understand that what you do is not necessarily who you are.
That's good. What does music do for people?
Music's essential for people. I think it's part of the rhythm of life. You know, it's like your heartbeat. You know, your heart beats, there's a beat, there's a flow. Music has always been a part of people's lives from primitive man, you know, especially rhythm, I think, is, you know, because if you go back to like drumming and things like that, which the most primitive version of music, you know, it's somehow built into us as a species. We're getting pretty deep here, girl. What are we doing?
What's the secret to a happy life?
Oh my God! What do you mean? You think I'm like the old man on the mountain? You know?
You're John freaking Oates. I'm gonna ask you everything.
Oh my God! Secret to a happy life?
Yep.
Read your contracts. Get a good lawyer. Musicians, they want to make music. They, of course, want to get their music out there, and they'll do anything. You know, they can be taken advantage of because, for the most part, they're usually not that sophisticated, at least old school musicians. I know for a fact, because I deal with a lot of younger artists now, and they're much more sophisticated, much smarter about what they're doing. Unfortunately, they live in today's world, which is a terrible world to be living in if you're a musician. So unfortunately, they know what's happening, and what's happening sucks. So it's a weird dichotomy. But, you know, really, you just, you know, someone puts a piece of paper in front of you and tells you that they're going to, you know, help you get to where you think you want to go and help you make money and sell records and go on tour. And it's easy to succumb to when you're not sophisticated about stuff like that.
When did you realize it was happening, and how did you get out of it?
Yesterday.
Well, now we go. Well, I thought that was all over, and it's all good.
It is.
It's
all over. Oh yeah, I'm thrilled. Right. I'm really happy about where I am right now. I've got a great wife. My son is healthy. I'm making the music I want to make. I've got the new band. I've got new music. I'm playing. You know, I'm healthy enough to do it. That's the big win, you know, because look around my contemporaries, look, people that I know, personally know, and others, you know, Ozzy Osbourne, and the list goes on and on. People are passing away, and, you know, creativity has a timestamp, and, you know, I can still write, I can still play, I can still sing, I can still travel. As you get older, those things become more precious. You realize that it's like a house of cards. You pull one out and something changes and you're done. So while I can still do it, I want to make the most of it. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And that's why I don't take it for granted.
Beautiful. Can't top that.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.